Thank you, Chairman, comrades, friends and guests. I'm very happy to be honoured and to have the opportunity to briefly address you all here today. I'm glad to be among old friends and honoured to be able to go this out of the way. Glad to be able, right, to be among you, able to assist the development of the Progressive Unionists and their vision of an empowered working class as envisaged by our late friends Gusty Spence, Billy Mitchell and David Irvine, among so many others who deserve to be better known than the relatively small number of us who remember them. Progressive unionism can be a lonely furrow to plough, especially at times when the voice which tends to be loudest is that of intolerance and, frankly, ignorance. It is brave for activists from the polled community to speak out for gay rights and marriage equality. It is brave to challenge the educational establishment on the hierarchy of grammar schools for the lucky few, with 80% of Protestant working class boys being failed in a system which neither cares nor caters for them. It is brave to stand against the ingrained Toryism of big house unionism and to stand with the trade unions and our allies in civil society and even the nationalist parties against the assault on our welfare state. And now, as we commemorate it, 70 years since the great victory of 1945, the UK's unfair electoral system has thrown up a Tory majority government, which is the backing of a rabid Tory press, to do the following. I was going to speak about the trade union bill, but it's been very, very well done and enunciated by the two previous speakers, and I don't need to enunciate and speak any further on that, other than there is a desire to emasculate the trade union movements, to silence them and imprison them, if possible, by the Tory right-wing people. And all of this, comrades, is building up to their ultimate goal, the removal of the United Kingdom from the European Union and its progressive labour legislation. They want to go even further, removing the UK from the European Convention on Human Rights, obliterating the Human Rights Act, a core component of the Good Friday Agreement. This bolsters our determined campaign for a Northern Ireland Bill of Rights. On top of that, they wish to open the NHS to private operators, outsource public services to their preferred providers, Circle, Capita and A4E, and cut taxes even more for the rich. That is why they quietly and fervently support TTIP. And I'm delighted as well to see a motion on the agenda here as well against TTIP. In Brussels last Wednesday, activists opposing the European Union's free trade agreements with the US and Canada symbolically handed over more than 3 million signatories to European Commission officials. The organisers of the Stop TTIP campaign said that with the help of 500 organisations including Congress and trade unions on both sides of the border here on the island, they had collected 3.2 million signatories from 23 member states in the space of a year. That's three times more than the official benchmark and surpassing the seven-country quorum for a European citizens' initiative to be launched. They say it is the largest number of signatories collected by a European citizens' initiative to date. However, their voices have also fallen on deaf ears. And of course they have. And instead, anyone reading a newspaper would have read the Home Secretary Theresa May's factory trade against immigrants. A large amount of the Tory MPs have a background in corporate lobbying, starting with the Prime Minister. The only non-political occupation, the only political non-political job he ever had was a lobbyist for a major commercial broadcaster. The European Union Commission and the Tory government are in bed together on TTIP, despite the sham fights we read about over Brussels' intolerance and interference. They claim that TTIP would produce jobs and growth, but when questioned about who would benefit from the growth, They simply rely on outdated economics about trickle-down theory, saying that it was obvious that ordinary workers would benefit if companies made bigger profits from increased trade. We're supposed to trust them. Trust them to protect regulatory standards that we know corporate lobbyists want to use TTIP to unstitch and unravel. Trust them to protect the rights of democratically elected governments to decide what's in the public sector and what isn't. Trust them to ensure that ISDS rules are amended in such a way that they don't do anything bad, despite offering foreign investors the unique privilege of access to special tribunals, not courts of law, special tribunals, to provide them with multi-million dollar compensation when governments do things they don't like. And one example of that is that in Peru, the government renationalized a mine. Under the ISDS rules, the people who owned it, shady characters, are suing the Peruvian government for $10 billion, American dollars. And that's been decided, not in the court of law, but in a boardroom, in a corporate system. And that's what happens, going to happen with TTIP if it is introduced here into Europe. And then we're supposed to trust them and ignore myths about TTIP by which they mean ignoring the all-too-real legal advice United Union has published, confirming that there are clear dangers arising from TTIP that will impact on the NHS. TTIP and the privatisation by stealth of the NHS are all of a piece. What the Health Secretary said quite soberly at the Tory conference last week, he explained to an audience who have never relied upon tax credits the real reason for cutting them. We have to proceed with these tax credit changes because they are a very important cultural signal. He said that under Conservative philosophy, how you earn money was as important as how much you earned, and not having to rely on state handouts promoted dignity and independence. We'll have a look at all the people who are going to food banks to show how much dignity and independence has been promoted by the Tories. Now, I want to talk here about what's actually at the core of this ideological attack on the marginalised and the working poor under the guise of welfare reform. I want to show you a few slides, because it's terribly important when you sit in the pub or have a family dinner or whatever you're meeting with your people, and you'll hear great arguments about this massive cohort of people, or listen to Stephen Nolan's show, who are all idle, don't want to work, and are fleecing the country and the taxpayers. I'm going to show you some diagrams here, and there's not an exam after it, by the way. So if you just pay me a little bit of attention, bear with me for a few minutes. The first slide shows the amount of spend by the United Kingdom on welfare. And you'll notice that the curve has went up in a normal way over the number of years of which it's showing, which is from 84 to 2014. Now, listening to the debate, you'd think there was a spike on the curve, that all of a sudden there's a mass spend that came all of a sudden from mass unemployment or whatever. So the spend has went up over gradual terms. Slide two there, please. Now, this is the amount of spend, which is about £200 billion the UK government spends. But look at the largest amount of who's it spent on. It's spent on pensioners. 40%. They will never tackle that because they're the largest cohort of people who vote. The next highest is the 14% that can find it up here, which is tax credits. Now, tax credits has increased, by the way, by £25 million over the last number of years. I think it's 15 years it's went up. And why it's went up in the last 15 years is because of the explosion of low pay. That's made to help people who don't get enough earnings, for people who work, by the way. Like, these are people who actually work. And an example of that would be between Asda, Sainsbury's, and Tesco. The taxpayers paid £700 million to the employees of those three companies last year because of the meagre wages they paid their employees. And despite the fact, by the way, that those three companies also together made £3.8 billion profit, but we're subsidising them. So when you hear about welfare,
That's pensioners, people in work. And over here then, 12%, the next, the third highest is spent on housing benefit. Now, tax credits are a sort of gateway to housing benefits. And the interesting thing about housing benefits, it's also moved up by over £25 million. Where'd you go? The interesting thing about that is the numbers have not increased at all in 20 years who are claiming housing benefit. 5 million people in the United Kingdom claim housing benefit. But if it up 25 million, who got the 25 million?
The landlords, they got the 25 million. And why has it been dumped by 25 million? So strange enough, it's because the price of houses went up. No social housing was built. And then you had Thatcherism selling off houses, which took away the stock of people who needed social housing. And that's why we have a huge cohort of people in poverty and homelessness. And there are homes because we're not building social houses. And here we are in a recession. And there's a recession impacted mostly, by the way, on the construction sector. Would you not think that our assembly and everybody should say, let's get people back into work, let's build council houses, let's house people properly, and take the money off the rich, the landlords, and those who would vote for Toryism. They're the people benefiting. And the other part you'll hear, if you go up to this little purple column up there, is the 3%, which is actually job seekers allowance. So those who are on the dole, who can't get a job, it's 3%. The smallest clear section there of all the spend in the United Kingdom, but nobody's talking about them. All they're talking about is this idle fellas loitering around the place who don't want a job. And in 2013, by the way, there were 5,000 job vacancies in Northern Ireland in June or July. There were 60,000 people unemployed, all competing for the 5,000 jobs. So how could they all get a job? And that's not even taken in the economically inactive. So those are just facts for you. So the next time you're in the pub with your mates and you hear about how all this great show in Nolan and all those lazy bastards and all, they're all out there idling around the place and they're robbing us of all the money. They're not. There's the facts. That's applicable data, cannot be challenged. And I think it's very important that you have a look at that. If you just go to the next one anyway, that just shows you, that's proof, by the way, what I said. 5 million people. From 84, still the same amount of people claiming housing benefit. Go to the next one, just to prove. These facts, by the way, are on a diagram, which you can get out there and understand the Congress of a Standard today, all that information, so you can put it out of your back pocket in the pub and you have no time to say, there's the facts. There's the expenditure, by the way, in tax credits, which again proves how employers are utilising this taxpayers' money to make sure that when people are in work, they don't starve. In actual fact, you could phrase that a different way and call that corporate welfare, meaning how we give welfare to businesses. Right? So there's a huge increase up there in the spike over there. So you can go to the next one then. It's another one. And that's just the housing benefit and the expenditure on that. Now, I've only got 10 minutes. Grant told me. Give me about 10 minutes. Now, I just want to talk about legacy. I'm good off script, right? But to be passionate about two things about legacy. I know legacy is coming up now next. But let me talk about legacy first of all. And I'm always on to Billy Hutchison. Many years ago, I think it was around 2005, 2006, I went to PU people and said, bring your banner down to the May Day March. Okay? And they turned up. And all of a sudden they disappeared after about 4 years. And I said, where's the Protestant working class on May Day? Ah, well, it's very difficult to march there because there's fellas there with sorry cows and there's fellas there with Erigi and all that. This is your legacy. I want to see you on May Day claiming back your legacy of the Protestant working class. And I want to see you there on May Day. And don't be put off by a few headbangers from dissident Republicans, because they only want one thing to happen. They want me to throw them out of the march.
So then they can call me a fascist, or get them arrested by the PSI and have a big argy-bargy. But you reclaim your heritage and be there on May Day next year. And let me also finish about the legacy. Up the title of that, this speech I was going to make, but he robbed the words of me. He must have found him in a taxi last night, but he drunk or left. Let's talk about Jerusalem. In 1945, Clement Attlee, who was standing for election on behalf of the Labour Party, spoke in the Central Methodist Hall in Westminster, in London, about building a new Jerusalem. And it was built on four foundations. The four foundations were a national health service, a welfare system, council housing, and free school education. Right? He was elected himself in Bedlam, a wonderful visionary at the time. And why did they advocate that? They advocated that because of the Great War and all those who died in the Great War, the working class people, and in the Second World War, fighting against fascism. It was a reward to the working class people of England who had sacrificed themselves at the Somme and everywhere else. That was the legacy. Attlee and Bevan were leaving to the people of the United Kingdom, to your family members who fought and died and suffered in the Great War and the Second World War. And that's your legacy. And what's happening to your legacy? Think about what's happening to it. The Tory party are dismantling the welfare state, the NHS, social housing and education. They're dismantling it. And when you see people at the Cenotaph, and we were our puppies and we attend this Remembrance Sunday, and you'll see them in Whitehall, all laying wreaths. And what they're doing is they're dishonouring those who fought and died because they're dismantling the legacy of building the new Jerusalem. And you remember that. And you know the old adage, we all say, we will remember them. Will you make sure one thing in your party do? You remember those people serving in the ballot box who are dismantling the new Jerusalem, your real legacy. Thank you.